Hi everyone. I'm going to talk today a little bit of VM integration systemd. I'm mostly talking about a bunch of loosely connected features. I'm not sure if half an hour is actually going to suffice to go through all the slides, but that's fine. We're just going to cover as many of the features that we can. The more important ones are at the beginning, the less interesting ones are at the end, so it's totally fine if we miss some of them. I usually like my sessions to be interactive, so if you have any questions, feel free to interrupt me, and we'll get to answering them right away. I much prefer that we're doing that all only at the end. So, I'm Nana Pettering. I work at the startup called Immutable that we recently founded. Yeah, let's jump right in. So systemd, what was that again? I mean, this is the VM dev room. So I guess systemd is not really known for being a VM thing, but so very quick introduction that I hope is actually unnecessary. But yeah, it's a service manager. It's a system manager, right? Like it not only manages service, it manages the system as a whole. And you can see it as a collection of user space components, and some of which we'll talk about in this talk. So the first thing, systemd as a guest, right? Like, so if you run systemd inside of a VM, there are a couple of nice things how it can integrate into the VM environment. The first one I want to talk about is a simple detection if you're running in a VM environment. This is exposed in two primary ways. There's one tool called systemd detect vert, and if you run it, it just tells you I'm running in QEMU or I'm running in Hyper-V or whatever else you have there. And there is connected to this, there's a unit file setting. It's called condition virtualization, which allows you to condition certain services to the VM environment you're running in, right? Like, so you can say, basically say that the agent that is specific to some VMM only runs inside of that VMM. It's very basic. I think it doesn't really deserve much more explanation, but one thing I would like to note is that, if you hack on a VMM, in particular one of the newer ones, the fancier ones that try to do very, very lightweight, please implement a mechanism so we can actually detect that we are running in such a VM. Usually this is done around CPU ID, leaves, like the specific one, and via SM bias or device tree. Please make at least one of these rings available, because otherwise it's not realistic to detect that we're running in a virtualized environment. So much about the first thing. I think it's very trivial. Well, let's talk about the second thing. It's SM bias type 11 stuff. SM bias, I hope, does everybody have a rough idea? Does anyone have not an idea what SM bias is? Oh, there are people. Okay, SM bias is this thing. It's like a relatively large data structure that has been around since BIOS times, like long before UEFI, which describes the system and its like parameters of the system, and passes that to the OS so that the OS can figure out what kind of hardware is there, and a couple of other things. It's the thing that you see if you type DMID code in your Linux shell. There's one particular kind of object in there, which is SMBIOS type 11 objects. The type 11 objects, I think they're called vendor strings or something like this. It's basically a way how arbitrary stuff can be passed into a system. This is particularly interesting for VMMs rather than physical devices, because it's a way how you can parameterize a VM in a really, really efficient way, right? Like, because it's just a piece of memory you pass in. There is no, like, I mean, the traditional way is how you provision a VM system with things like cloud in it and IMDS and emulated CD-ROM drives. It's all horrible and slow, requires DHCP, and it's like this massive stack of things. This one's super easy, right? Just some memory to pass through there. There are free-form vendor strings. The ones that systemd reads have a specific form. We'll come to that. But yeah, they are just memory. They are simple. They are fast. If you want to use them with QEMU, you just type something like this. It basically just says, set another SMBIOS type 11 object. The value here is io.systemd.credential. That's simply like how we want them to be formatted, so that systemd consumes them and can assign a variable foo to a value bar. From user space, like from inside of the VM, they show up in a SysFS file, and we can just read this, and that's what systemd does. There are a couple of them that systemd defines by default, like The bootloader, like systemd-boot, for example, allows you to select, I don't know, additional kernel command line options or additional boot entries, even the boot menu. Or you can tweak the log level with that the bootloader has so you can actually see things, can configure the timeout and things like this. Most interesting one is, though, this one, iosystemd.credential, which allows passing in system credentials to the VM. And that's a really powerful feature. Like, there are two ways how you can do this. Either like there's a simple text form, or there's one that takes base64 so that it can pass in arbitrary stuff. To understand what this actually does, let's have a small intermission here about systemd credentials. Systemd credentials is a concept we introduced a couple of years ago to systemd, which is how you're supposed to parameterize a system as a whole, and the services in particular. It's our answer. You know, the web world likes to parameterize their containers with environment variables, and I think it's a really stupid idea, because they are by default propagated, and there's no access control on them, right? Like, everybody can read them, and it's just a terrible way to propagate secrets because it's very, like, by default propagated and very open. So we created this alternative. It's basically small pieces of information that we expose ultimately as little files and can carry both secrets and regular data. They're inheritable down the tree. Like, you can inherit them from a host into a service, but you can also from a container manager VM into a host into a service. So you can just propagate it always further down the tree. We defined many of them that are well known. Like, every service can define their own, but a couple of them we defined as the vocabulary that always systemd understands. Like, there's one for the root password, for the host name, anything, like everything you kind of want. From the service point of view, they show up in a special directory where you get an environment variable which tells you, look in this directory and you'll find the files and they'll have that name. They also have, so the propagation is always opt-in, as opposed to environment variables where the propagation is usually by default. And access modes apply, meaning that, when a service gets a credential passed in, we'll make sure that these files are locked down so that only that service under its user ID can access them and not everything else. It also has a hookup to the local TPM so that you can have authenticated credentials. Like, you can have them encrypted at rest, you can pass them in to your VMM encrypted, but the moment the service that is actually supposed to consume them is activated, we'll unlock them and pass them to the service in plain text. It's our answer to, as mentioned, environment variables into these awful provisioning systems that are everywhere, like Cloudin and things like this, which have these massive stacks of things. This one's really simple, really clean in a way, and has all these nice properties that we like. But this was just an intermission, right? So if you take the SMBIOS Type 11 stuff, you basically, there's now a way how you can pass into VM all these kind of settings naturally on any systemd system already out there, and we'll consume them and set a root password and whatever else. Next thing, any question to this point? No, okay, so the next thing is SDNotify style notification. So SDNotify is a concept in systemd, how originally services could tell the service manager, like systemd, that they have completed initialization. So this is required to have a clean boot up, right? Like, where one service is started and then another service is started that might depend on the first one. You need to synchronize this properly so that the first one has finished startup, so that it's connectable, so that the second one that wants to connect it can do this. So we created SDNotify for this. It's an extremely simple protocol, basically, where the service just receives an address of an AF Unix socket, and then the service just sends a message to this. It's so basic and so simple and, I think, elegant that we just decided to extend this so that we can also do ready notifications of the VMs as a whole. VMs, of course, do not have AF Unix. They have AF VSOC. So this is what it really is. Like, we have the VMM can set up an AF VSOC a socket, listen on it, and then the payload can send a message when it's ready. It's extremely powerful. The way how a VMM would communicate this to the payload is by, again, setting a system credential. The ones we were just talking about is called vmm.notifySocket, and just sets the CID, like the AFVSOC address that shall receive this message, and then we'll connect to it and send the message. This is not just about simple ready notification, just about like as you might think that it will just report when the boot up is complete. It actually sends up a lot more, because it will tell you about like how far the boot has already progressed. Specifically, there's one message that is sent if SSH, for example, is up, because for many use cases it's all you need, right? Like you want to know the moment where you can connect via AFVSOC to the VM via SSH. We also announced a little bit of meta information there, like the host name, machine ID. So this, which is sometimes really nice, because it means that the VMMs are not as much as a black box to the host anymore. But they, I mean, typically they know the CID of the VM, but with this they also know the host and machine ID, really basic information. There's also announced is shutdown details, right? Like when the system goes down again, we can propagate something like an exit status of the VM. So the VM starts to feel a little bit like a classic process where you can do exit 7 or something like this, and this propagated up to the VMM and can see this. There's also, like, you know, in Linux there's this reboot string that you can have, which is used by embedded hardware usually, but we generalize it and also propagate this up so that if you have a VM, yeah, this also ends up. So it's like a textual form of a of an access status that, that you can propagate to the VM, a VMM. Questions at this point?
How is this information accessible in the host?
The question was regarding how this information is accessible in the host. Well, the VMM receives it, and how the VMM makes use of this is up to the VMM, right? So my assumption is it would just provide some API, but that's specific to the VMM. It's outside of the scope of systemd. The next thing, systemd as a guest, is we recently added the thing where if we, like, there's a little generator in systemd. Generator are these little binaries that can basically extend the dependency tree of systemd dynamically and locally based on configuration or based on what's available. There's one that checks if AFVSOC is available, like if you're running in a VM where AFVSOC is enabled, then also checks if the SSHD binary is around, and if so, it automatically binds SSH to AFVSOC. It's extremely simple, it's extremely powerful, because it basically means that if you run a VM and you just enable AFVSOC, you can just connect to it without any kind of network configuration. It's very fast, very simple. It's as secure as SSH is secure, and makes it so much easier to debug things, because you do not have to rely on the unreliableness of networking to be able to talk to your VM. And remember, we have notifications when SSH is up, right? Like, so you can make use of this. Without anything, like, as long as your VM has SSHD around as well, and as long as you enable AFVSOC, you will get a notification basically, oh, it's connectable now. And also remember, via the credential stuff, you can also provision SSH keys into the VM. So you have a really, really nice way, very simple way, very fast way, how you can configure the SSH inside of it, get notification when it's ready, and connect to it. To make a point here, none of this, like, we automatically disable all this logic in confidential computing, because then it's a more complicated situation. We should maybe not make all this stuff available so that the VMM can basically control access to the VM. So yeah, the provisions is there so that we don't do this. So we only do this basically if the trust model is the traditional one, where the payload has to trust the VMM in full. Any question at this point? Okay, one more thing here. Systemd boot, you know, it's that bootloader of systemd, or it's actually more of a boot menu. Support has been added to make it possible to embed in the UEFI firmware. That's really nice, because it means that the images that you boot inside of the VM do not have to contain any bootloader anymore, but you still get boot menu, you get boot counting, you get all this kind of interactivity, but also control an API towards the bootloader to pick something without actually having to include that in the image. This is like the way how you use it with Keem, where you just specify dash kernel and specify the EFI binary. It's not a kernel, right? It's just how Keem exposes this. It will still search the ESP for kernels and boot from it. It's actually really, really nice because it means that a disk image that you insert just really has to have the UKI in the root file system. Any question at this point? Next thing, you know, when you deal with VMs, you also want to have logging. So the systemd journal, which is like the logging framework of systemd, has this option called forward to socket. Initially, it was about forwarding log output automatic to some IP address, but you know what? It actually also supports AFVSOC these days. So this is a very simple, very natural way how you can get live access to the logs of a VM. And you can configure this again via system decredentials. So you can basically start a VM and say, I want my logging to get out on this AFVSOC, and you immediately see everything that's happening. It's simple, it's nice. It's very efficient, very fast, very early in boot. I mean, it's not going to cover the kernel stuff. I mean, not at least live the kernel stuff, because after all, this is a journal configuration. It will only get into effect once journal D is up. But yeah. Question at this point? No. Next thing is system repart. This is like this dynamic partition thing in systemd. So this one doesn't really have anything to do with VMs, but I think it's very useful when you deal with VMs to know about this. System repart is a dynamic repartitioner. And this is particularly useful in VMs because very often you have like a golden image that you deploy on a VM and then boots up and sets up the disk. Sizing the disk is something that shall happen locally on the individual node where you deploy the thing. With system repart, you can do this very easily because it basically means that you can just have to, like, you just have to increase the size of the host, and you can let system repart do the rest for you and bump up, like grow the file systems on disk, or even create them with keys that are specific to the boot of that VM. Encrypt things to the actual disk that you provided to the VM. It's really nice. Again, this is not strictly using any VM concept, but it's extremely useful in VMs. Question at this point? The question was regarding which file systems, and it's a typical Linux file system, XT4, Barfs, and all these kind of things. So the question was regarding if it also covers LVM. No. Not a fan of LVM. There's a question. What is it, the question was regarding what is expected from the partition layout of the image that is booted. Well, it has to follow the boot, the discoverable image specification, which is something that we put up on your API. So you basically have to tag. I mean, you don't strictly have to that, but it gets very painful if you don't. But you have to tag basically your partition as this is a root file system for x86 or something like this. But if you are preparing the VMs in 2026, there's a good chance they will be put together like this anyway. Next topic, it's Secuboot auto-enroll. You know, if you run a VM, it's sometimes useful to have like this tofu concept where the image that you boot, you just accept, but then you want to log that in specific VM instance so that from that point on, it's only this image that boots inside of the VM and nothing else. In systemd, we have since a while a concept of auto-enrolling of Secuboot that basically means that if you boot up a VM with UEFI Secuboot setup mode, then the bootloader that we have, systemd boot, can automatically enroll a key in the DB, like in the key ring of Secuboot, lock the system down, reboot, and then go through. This is extremely useful in VM environments. It's not so useful in physical devices, because in physical devices, replacing Secuboot keys is kind of problematic because you don't know necessarily what kind of hardware you have, and if there is NVIDIA card in there that really requires signed firmware drivers, and then if you kick out the keys, then everything breaks. But in VM environments, it's very, very simple and very robust because, yeah, the VMM controls what the firmware is, and it's typically very simple. There are no extension cards, nothing. So it's a really lovely concept, right? Like, so if you prepare a disk image, you just have to put the Secuboot signing keys that you want to be added in a special directory, and then when systemd sees them, it will just, and figures out that the system is in setup mode so that it can enroll them, it will just enroll them. Boot, turn off Secuboot setup mode, and then you're locked down. It's something I can just recommend everybody to just do. Like, it's so simple. If you build an image, just do this. Because, I mean, I personally believe that the value of Secuboot is relatively limited, but in this case, it's really nice because it's so easy to do. And it basically means that you lock down the VM to the payload that you passed it, and if an attacker gets access to your VM, they cannot use a completely different payload, it's install SUSE just because Fedora was first booted. question at this point? Okay, there's more. There's hookups with Cocoa. I'm not going to go into this. Hopefully soon we'll have like the generation ID so that systemd actually has an understanding of when snapshots are made and things like this. But yeah, this doesn't exist right now. Next, I'm going to cover a couple of topics, not so many, about systemd on a host, meaning that you have VMs running on the host, like below the host, and what systemd provides to make it nice interfacing with this. The first one is something called systemd SSH proxy. It's a trivial proxy for SSH, so that you can actually connect via the SSH client to a VM that has a VSOC and has SSH listening in there. It's basically the other side from this SSH generator that I was talking earlier about, because SSH natively has no clue about how connecting to a VSOC works, and this adds this in. It's called a proxy, but it's actually not really a proxy. Proxy kind of suggests to me that it would actually shift bytes around. It doesn't do this. All it does, it's a very, very short-lived, and is a way how you can tell SSH, like basically when you connect to an AV socket, it will return the actual transport socket back to SSH, and from that point on, it's out of the loop and just exits. So yeah, name is misleading. The reason why it's called that way is because SSH names it that way, not because it wouldn't make any sense. It's enabled by default if you have a current systemd. Question? No question. There's one more thing. We recently added something called systemd NS resource D. It's basically it does a couple of things. Like the main purpose of the tool is actually to hand out a username space. Well, you give in a username space, which is this Linux isolation thing that's mostly interesting for containers. I guess it's also interesting for VMs, but it's people don't think so much about it there. And it gets a user ID range assigned. But one of the things that it also can do, it can then, if you have that, assign a network interface to it and allow this for unprivileged clients. So it's very simple, right? You just do an IPC call and you get a file descriptor to a tap device, and then you can pass that to key emo, and it just works. And there's network D behind it, so you actually get a DHCP address and things like this. It's my personal answer, that like people always do like with key email, like this user space networking, so that they have unprivileged VMs and things like this. I don't like this. But this is like our alternative to this. You actually get real networking, real DHCP with routing and stuff like this, and just works. The backend of the networking part is systemd network D. Built on DHCP server, blah 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 blah. A resolve D resolution as well, right? Like so, if you have a name assigned to your VM, then you can actually resolve things, and the IP addresses go there.
Can you also do that for Mac VTAP?
So the question was regarding if we can also do that via Mac VTAP. I think I added it for IPv. Like I added for one more. I don't actually remember which one, but if you need it, it's trivial to add, right? Like because we have the code anyway. It's just hooking them up also in NS resource D. Then this is kind of the last thing I want to talk about. There's also systemd machine D, which simply keeps track of your local machines. It also tracks containers, but it basically just maintains a list. It's very simple. It's just you register your stuff with it, and that makes things like the CID, like the AF VSOC address and things like this, available to systemd, and we can use it for various things. For example, systemd SSH proxy then can ask that thing for a name so that it can find the CID. So in a way, it acts a little bit like the DNS, but for AFVSOC in a local scope. But it's also kind of interesting because it means that when you can do PS with some options, you actually see like which QEMU instance actually belongs to which VM and things like this. So there's tracking there. This is the very last slide with content. Any point question at this point? I'm kind of impressed that we actually managed to go through all my slides. I didn't expect that. This is the last thing. Like we added something called systemd VM spawn to systemd a while back. We mostly did this for our own testing stuff because all the stuff that I was talking about earlier regarding integration of these credentials and things like this. If you use raw QEMU, you always have to put together these complicated command lines. It's not user friendly. It's very You can do it, but it requires a lot of typing. With systemd VM spawn, what we did is, I'm not sure if you guys know systemd nspawn, which is like this little container manager that we have in systemd, and I don't know, I like using it. It's like the interface that, well, I wrote it, so I'm used to that thing, and I think it's very user-friendly. So systemd VM spawn just exposes the almost the same interface, but it actually just forks off QEMU and does all the parameters. So if you want to do SSH stuff and credentials and things like this, it will just do the right thing for you, hide all this, and then just wrap QEMU, register it nicely, and things like this. So yeah, use it. It's mostly not for like production stuff. It's mostly for local stuff, and that's it. Do we have time for a question?
One, two questions.
That's a question. Sorry, I don't.
Are there any plans to take that A and B of pattern that you use for SSH and do something for Donald D, make it more general, like for any network connections that is the guest-nomic file network anymore?
Like the question was regarding if we can take the A of VSOC support that we have in Journal D and things like that and make it available for any networking stuff. I mean, systemd has like the socket unit concept, and it can listen on AF Unix sockets, and it can listen on IP sockets, but it can also always, since years, it has been able to listen on AF VSOC sockets. So if your application is generic enough that it doesn't really care about the family, SSHD, for example, is like this, then yes, you can just use it, and it's entirely generic and bind anything to it, like a shell or whatever else. There was another question? Sorry, I don't... So the question was regarding systemd as a guest, if it can be used without root, you want to run systemd inside of a VM, but not give the VM root? I don't understand that question, because... Yeah? Okay. So if the functionality that we provide inside of the guest, if that can be like, this really depends on what you're talking about. Like connecting outside, mostly yes, depending on what the kernel policy or things are. Like on Linux, like AFVSOC, everybody can bind AFVSOC. But I don't have any time anymore. If you have further questions, let's do this outside. Thank you very much.